Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios here in Cumming, Georgia, it's time for Stewarding Family Wealth. And now, here's your host.
Good afternoon, folks. This is Randy Brunson with Centurion Advisory Group on this episode of Stewarding Family Wealth. You can learn more about us at our website, which is Centurion AG. But let's jump into the podcast today. This episode on the air with me is Mr. Hal Schlinger, just a close personal friend, a phenomenal guy who's been fully immersed in the healthcare space for some years now. Hal, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Randy. Good to see you.
Absolutely. Thank you for your patience today in particular. I was a little late getting to the studio, and you and Amanda have been very kind. We typically put two episodes together at a time, and been doing this podcast for about a year and a half. And what I always enjoy is just hearing the story. You, like most of us here, you did not grow up in Georgia.
Correct. Grew up in Baltimore, Maryland.
Grew up in Baltimore. Right. And you were kind enough to send me some bio information before we sat down, and I was reading through it. And your mom was a homemaker and a teacher. Is that what I read?
Correct. Right. Homemaker first. And while she had an education for teaching, she didn't teach full time, but she did teach special ed kids.
Ooh, yeah. Now that's a special calling. Did you have conversations with your mom about what took her that direction?
She was so much about family. And I think so many of our people, like you, family's so important. So I think that was really it. And this was her way of helping other families.
Right.
Because special needs kids are good kids. It's amazing what's in their brains. It's just giving them the opportunity to succeed. So having a special ed where she was teaching was helping the kids develop and blossom.
She's still with us? Or she gone?
No, she's passed.
Yeah. My folks are gone as well. Yeah. You mentioned special needs children. That we'll talk about this another time. But a dear friend of Amanda's and mine, and you can hear a podcast. His name is Jamie Hamilton with the Special Needs School of Gwinnett.
Okay.
So, given your mom's background, you would appreciate the work that they do.
Always do. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, and your dad was an engineer.
Yep, he was an engineer with a bad sense of humor. That's hereditary, I think.
Okay, so do you recall any that you had some quotes listed when we were when you sent your information over? You had some quotes. All right, so here's a random question. Do you remember any of his like terrible dad jokes?
I can't recite the jokes at the moment, but yes, there's plenty of them. Oh. And he was as much a punster, so puns were important in our family.
Yes,
and so were practical jokes. And I can't really think of one beyond. Whenever we went out to a restaurant with friends, mm-hmm. it was that person's birthday, regardless of what it was. And it was always interesting to see, let's say that you and I went out.
Okay.
And you didn't know this, but I invited you to lunch or dinner. And then we just tell you kind of pass along in the conversation to the wait person, it's Randy's birthday. This is really great that you're, and you don't know it. And it's always fun to see how people can react.
Yes. So it wasn't their birthday, but your dad would treat it as if it was. And
we want to celebrate Randy. Sure. It's Randy's birthday yeah. today. And let's just have a dessert. Yes.
That is so cool. That is so cool. That would have been, sound like it was a great way to grow up.
It was. It was always fun. You know, sock puppets. And we used to, when we got introduced to Mediterranean, Middle Eastern food, and you get things in pita bread. And my dad's first reaction when he saw it was to make it start talking, right? It's a pocket. It's just
the sock puppet thing with the pita bread, of course.
Yeah, this is playful.
That is so cool. No, brothers and sisters, you?
I have a younger sister. Uh-huh. She still lives in Maryland, and she's all good. She doesn't have as much of a sense of humor, but she picked up a lot from my mom. So on that side, the less funny side was very much about family. We observed holidays, participated in holidays together. We keep in touch with certain things. And family pretty much came first.
Right. Yeah, I have a sister as well, and she lives on the other side of the country, and yet still we are intentional about getting together when we can. You know, because those are choices you make, because we all pick our friends.
Right.
And with the family, you love them, and you choose to be with them, you know. So it's a different thing. That's good. That's good.
And so it's worked out well. Our kids are both, her kids and my kids are grown, so we have stories about that. And there's those connections you don't realize about what you grew up with,
right,
that was important to you. Oh, do you remember this and you remember that?
Yeah.
And that's what's important.
It is.
You know, so often we get so busy. You're talking about your busy schedule and right, following your calendar. And I look back and we would always make sure we blocked out time for that family activity. I do find, even in business, you can find certain people that you work with or clients and whatever,
right,
who will tell you, I can't do this because it's a family activity.
Yeah.
And I applaud that. I think right, that, you know, why are you working so hard? I mean, I want you to save all my money you can and not save it. I want you to grow my money as much as
right,
you can.
That's right.
For what purpose?
To what end, right?
To what end? Yes, yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
And family can be a part of it or should be part of it.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So that's good. What was I going to ask you? Oh, you talked about lacrosse and you talked about radio and theater.
Right.
So talk about those fascinating high school experiences. So lacrosse is very popular along the East Coast, especially originally the Mid-Atlantic, Maryland, New Jersey, and on down into the Carolinas even.
Right.
And those kinds of things. So you grew up playing lacrosse.
I did. So I always grew up playing team sports, mm-hmm, and I'm not a good golfer. So we'll just put that aside right from the beginning. And this kind of gives you the sense of who I became. Was my dad played a little bit of lacrosse, and this would have been in the 40s or 50s. So
right, way back.
Wait, thank you. Mm-hmm. Yes. And when I was growing up, and by the way, my uncles had played too, so lacrosse was in the family, and it's a popular sport in Baltimore. And I was in elementary school. There was no lacrosse. In fact, the only lacrosse kids played before college was in high school. But in the private schools, they would play in the middle schools and high schools. So my dad said we should play. So he got with the recreation league, the Parks and Recreation, where we lived, and got them to create a team under their umbrella and help promote it and such.
Okay.
So not only did I learn to play a team sport, I also realized that if you want something to happen, sometimes you got to take responsibility and drive it yourself.
Right.
So we knew as the kid, although I was a lacrosse player, I was also the organizer's son, which meant that when the equipment came in, I had to go clean it or I had to go shelve it or we had to go, whatever it was, I was the labor.
Right. You were the labor. You were doing all the operational stuff here. Take care of this. Hal, take care of that.
Carry this over here. We need that. Yeah. So, and yeah, that was fun. I mean, but that you learn, like so many of us do, that things aren't just done. It takes effort to get things to happen.
Right.
This podcast, it takes time and effort to get the equipment ready and the organizing and the scheduling and all the things it takes. It just doesn't happen. Right. You've got a plan. You've got to organize. So that's what I learned from that. So, and then lacrosse is just a great sport. It's a team sport. So even though, in Maryland, we make fun of New Yorkers as often as we can, which in Atlanta doesn't go over really well.
Because a lot of them here.
Too many of them. There's more of them here than us. Yes. Yeah. But you learn it's a team sport. And what was fun to me was watching the flow of the game. And I picked up in lacrosse, in lacrosse, it's common to have offensive players behind the goal, which in basketball, there's nobody playing behind the hoop. And in hockey, there's very little space behind the goal. So it was a little bit different. But I found that I was playing in a position that was behind the goal because I could often make plays happen. And we use the term feeding somebody. We would feed the ball to somebody who's in front of the ball, in front of the goal, and they would be able to shoot.
So you could do that from behind the goal then, the way the cross field set up.
Right. And I found that I had as much joy feeding the ball. We called it getting the assist. Well, you still call it the assist in basketball and other
right,
teams. I was happy with high numbers of assists and low number of goals because to me that showed teamwork.
If it's teamwork, you allowed someone else to create success. It worked for the team.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of yeah, thing. I was going to ask you, are there two or three things just from playing lacrosse or other team sports, are there two or three things that you learned in that have served you well over these years since then?
Sure. Team sports, it is a team. So it does require other people and it requires communication. And it also requires setting expectations. Like, I know that if I'm going to feed the ball to somebody who's getting near the goal, I expect them to have already learned how to catch and throw the ball. Mm-hmm. And I understand that if they're in a crowd, I need to get the ball at a certain place, but I'm not going to do it in a way that's going to expose them to being hit, knocked over. So I think there's that, while the bottom line is trust, the trust comes from good communications and good planning, because we will do our practice. Oh my goodness, we know about practice. And you do it over and over and over. But that's the kind of work you put into things. Right. So what I learned from lacrosse was you put the time and effort in, and I've never met anybody who liked doing wind sprints.
Right.
And it should stay that way. But it also gives you character, and it also gives you the legs you need to play the game. Yeah. So I found that the communication, I was fascinated. I was very fortunate when I went to Syracuse. I was very fortunate to be able to play with some of the Native Americans. And I say that, and I don't mean to stereotype all Native Americans, but it's their sport.
So what's their sport?
The Native Americans in the northeast part of the U.S. and in Canada is where the game originated from.
Okay.
And it was somewhat of a game of war or territory. But getting to what has become modern lacrosse, the Native American community grew up with that for generations. And again, not trying to be stereotypical, but trying to put it in perspective, that there were a lot of Native American players who were very, very good. And I think it's just because they understood how the game was played and how it flowed and the thing. And I was able to play with a couple of them. A couple of Native Americans were on our team. And I was fascinated by, maybe you want to call it intuition. They understood how the ball was flowing. And one of the guys on the team was a bit chunkier than most of us. And he was still outstanding because he could see the way the ball was flowing, the way people were moving. And he might only take one or two steps. But we all knew that when he took those two steps, he was open. So his style was very different. But again, we all practiced together. We communicated. And we understood when Milt was moving, he might be standing in a crowd, but he would watch as the ball moved and Milt would end up being open when you just didn't expect it.
Wow. It's fascinating to watch someone like that who's just, it's almost embedded in how they operate, in their genes, if you will.
Yeah.
You know, those kinds of things. Yeah. That is cool.
And I think the other thing I learned, and you mentioned theater. I was we had theater in our high school, and I found that what was related to that, that became me, was I was stage crew. Mm. I designed stage stuff and I helped the crew, and we delivered, you know, the lights came on at the right time and the sets moved around at the right time. And what I found was what you said a moment ago, which was helping other people to succeed. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of joy that comes from seeing other people succeed, whether it's your family, your business, whatever, that it's not always about you. And when I teach sailing, it's the same thing. Watching people, the light bulb goes off and all of a sudden they can make the boat move and they can go where they want. They find joy. And what you've just done is you've given them something. You've given them, whether you call it happiness or joy or satisfaction. But to me, that's all part of our purpose.
It is. I've thought about this more than once, but at this point in my life, there's almost nothing that I need to accomplish to say that I've accomplished it. Mm-hmm. You know, you go through this mental checklist of you know, when you're young, of, oh, I want to have this or do this or own this or buy that or whatever, or live here or drive this kind of car or whatever it is.
Right.
I've checked all those boxes that I want to check. Mm-hmm. There's still some traveling Teresa and I would like to do, but some of those boxes I've checked, and there's great satisfaction, especially in a team, like at the office. Mm-hmm. or this is even more fun for me with clients, because we are fully immersed in the wealth management space. And so we have processes. There you go. We have processes in place for tracking progress and growth of financial statements and financial health and all the stuff, right? But to be able to sit with someone and say, you know, you are making progress, this is allowing you to do A, B, and C, and then to watch people experience what they plan to do or dreamed about doing, it's just a form of psychic income All right.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. It's actually a form of income that the IRS has not yet figured out how to tax. Now, I'm certain that there's somebody that works for the IRS that is attempting to figure out how to tax psychic income. And if somebody from the IRS is listening and they haven't thought about it yet, we'll delete this part of it so that you don't give anybody any ideas. But, you know, there's a sense of, yeah, of, you said, satisfaction or just, you know, this is a home run because other people are able to do the things they want to do or see success or experience positive outcomes in life because you and I were involved in some way.
So you're talking about the positive outcomes and such. There's a book called Conscious Wealth. Mm-hmm. And the whole thing was you already have a lot. Even if you don't have a lot,
right?
You have a lot. There's people, there's all these people have less than you.
Always.
Yes, there's people that have more than you. And there's nothing wrong with striving to do more.
That's right.
And you should always strive, whether it's financial or personal growth, right? We're all striving. At the same time, there's nothing wrong with being happy where you are.
Yes.
And appreciating, like they always say, stop and smell the roses. Like, that's a good thing. I sponsor a program called Walk with the Doc. And it's because, I mean, the idea is you go out for a walk every couple of weeks, every other week, And we bring a doctor along, not because you're going to get sick, but to talk to the doctor about how to stay healthy. And what's fascinating is they talk about how much the mental health is so important.
Mm-hmm.
So be happy with what you have. There's nothing wrong with striving. That's giving you purpose.
Right.
I heard somebody explain that, you know, why do you try to have so much money? Well, if I have more money, I can do more good things for people.
But you're right, there's a philosophy there. I call it a downside, okay? One of the potential downsides of capitalism is its absolute raw power to create wealth. It works,
okay? Mm-hmm. Right.
And the challenge is some of the, how do I want to say this? Is there are, you're familiar with the concept of addictions.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And Randy's definition of an addiction is any place that we go, any activity we engage in as a means of finding validation that's outside, this is Randy's philosophy, that is outside of our creator, because it's only whoever created us that can define us. That's Randy's definition of addiction. Now, there are addictive behaviors, changing subjects briefly, there are addictive behaviors that are against the law, and there are any number of addictive behaviors that are morally icky, right? Is icky right. A word? Okay.
It is now, yeah.
Then there are addictive behaviors that are rewarded in a capitalistic marketplace.
Agree.
Right? All right. So here's to your point about living our lives so that we are content. We set goals, you know. So I've had to think about this a lot because I personally am immersed in numbers. And you know what they are? They're just entries on a page. It's like, okay, that's just a number. All right. So I've had to reframe my thinking entirely in terms of business goals. Mm-hmm. And it is how many. It's a set number, but the number of people that we will be given the opportunity to serve over an identified time frame. So completely restructured goals, because revenue is simply a byproduct of service.
Right. Revenue byproduct.
It's a byproduct of helping people do whatever it is they want to do. Regardless of the product or service you're selling, revenue is more of a byproduct, and I've found it can really mess with your head if you make revenue the goal rather than something else the goal. Like, again, I haven't fully developed this, but I've thought about it a great deal just in terms of pursuing clarity in my own head about why am I doing this? What's the purpose of all this?
So what you were describing in accumulating money, people will say is the same thing with accumulating good health or protecting good health.
Right.
You've got to be able to decide what to do and then go do it. And are you distracted versus being disciplined?
Right. Do Do I need to respond to every email that comes in? No. Is it prudent of us as a firm to serve everyone that reaches out to us and says we need help? Probably not. We need to focus on where we add the most value. Right. I think that's the same for any of us in business. We have to be really, really clear on the purpose that you were describing. What's the purpose? Why do we do what we do? Where do we maximize the value we bring to others? And it makes decisions not easy, but it can certainly simplify decisions.
Yes, simplifying decisions. I think there's a key value for, there's an organization called Story Branding, and it's a marketing concept called Story Branding.
Yes.
And they talk about describe a problem and help people picture in their mind a story, right? Stories are so great. That's what we're doing here.
Right.
Tell the story. And then you need to be the guide or the Sherpa to help them get to the decision. And to your point, and I do this with the health insurance, as you start asking the questions and having the conversations, the answers become obvious, which reminds me of Einstein's quote, if you have an hour to solve a problem, what do you do? And Einstein's answer was spend 55 minutes asking questions. Because once you've asked all those questions, the answers become obvious.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that. That's the kind of thing you're asking me, what have I learned? And my dad, being an engineer, was all about black and white. Engineering is so much about proven math and proven science, and here's how you make things happen.
Right.
And I like the idea of that. That showed me that you could take a space or an idea and take the chaos of the ideas and turn it into a structure.
Yeah.
Right. So you're making order out of chaos.
Yeah.
And I find the same thing happens with questions. You know, you can take, as you go through all those questions, you're trying to understand, well, is it this or is it that? Is it this or is it that? And all of a sudden the chaos that we know of as our daily lives can be simplified the way you were just describing it. And then it's like, okay, I can't do everything. Yeah, that's not really important. This is really important. I would like to be able to do that. And all those pieces come together. And then it's like, oh, you obviously want this kind of thing.
That's true. And I personally have found that the more I embed into my life is just a habit or a discipline, the more I embed the habit of silence, carving out specific times of the day, and morning works for me, because I'm the first person up. I get up early and I'm the first person up and the only person up for 2 or 3 hours. But simply to be in silence for calmness and reflection and coffee, of course, if you're a coffee drinker,
that makes reflecting go faster.
Exactly. That allows to embrace the subtleness, to get clarity on the day. What are the 2 or 3 things that really need to be done today? And all these other things that are demanding my time. It's like, no, I don't think so. You know, that kind of thing.
So two things relate to that, which I love where you were going. This is one of them. And I got this from a TED talk. If you want to give your brain ideas,
yes,
they're wonderful podcasts. One of them says, kids today don't know how to be bored. Being bored is not a bad thing.
Mm-mm.
As much as we learned in the, I don't know, the 80s about rush, 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 more, more, more. Being bored isn't bad. It makes your mind wander. It comes up with ideas.
Creativity.
Yeah. Yeah. So I heard that and I just thought that was fascinating. There's another thing, again, going back to healthcare, which we'll talk about, we can talk more about later. The healthcare system right now is very reactive. You get paid, doctors tend to be paid based on services provided, reacting to a illness or accident, or whatever's presented, right? And there's a doctor who did a book called Slow Medicine. And her point was, if you come in to see me and I look you over, I do my evaluation and I go, okay, let's do this. Let's try this. That's often what we do. And it works well for the doctor and it works well for, well, it sort of works well for the doctor, it sort of works well for the patient, and it works well for the whoever's paying for this, because it's a diagnosis, a treatment, and we evaluate. Great. And we all understand that science isn't perfect and medicine isn't perfect and people are different. So this is not a criticism of anybody. We've done a lot of success. We have a great healthcare system in the U.S. as far as quality goes. Her point about slow medicine, though, was just like business. You know, if we stop for a minute and go, okay, here's option A. We write it down. And if you don't stop there and say, Randy, thanks for telling me what I should do with my money. If I didn't do that, what else would I do? Now, you do this habitually because you don't give one answer. You keep researching and look for more stuff. But imagine if I went to a wealth advisor and said, what should I do? And you came up, well, you know, here's some ideas. And I said, okay, as opposed to challenging you and saying, are there any other ideas? Or what are the other options? And slow medicine is allowing the doctor to take more time to come up with a second or third idea. And then you decide what's really going to be the right for you.
That's true.
It's okay to be bored. It's okay to go slow. It's in spite of the fact that we're trying to do text messaging and answer as quickly as we can. I think you're right.
It's okay to de-link and to have space and quietness in your life.
Yeah.
You know, you know, I want to talk more about your career, and in particular, what's going on in healthcare financing, healthcare in general. We'll talk about all of that. But
there goes the joy.
Is that good?
There goes the joy. This conversation was so pleasant.
Let's jump into that in the second episode. Let's wrap up this first episode of Stewarding Family Wealth. In the studio today has been with me, Mr. Hal Schlinger. And Hal, thanks so much for joining us. And I'm going to sign off here. But thank those of you that are listening. And Miss Amanda, who is behind the engineering board over there, thank you. We'll see you on the next episode.